It's the old cliche, but if I treat people the way I want to be treated, treat them with respect. I'm big on respect, humility, appreciation, recognition. You treat people well, I don't care if it's business. I don't care if you're looking for a bandmate to form a band with.
Yeah.
They're going to love you and they're going to want to work with you. And then money, the bottom line is a byproduct of all that other stuff.
You are listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
I am delighted to be joined today by Yoni Asharov. Yoni, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Matthew.
Yoni is the founder and president of MWR Life. He's a serial entrepreneur. He started his first company at the age of 17 and has spent nearly 20 years building profitable organizations. With MWR Life, he set out to fundamentally disrupt the growing services sector and in the process, help everyday people realize their true life's potential. So, I mean, that's a fabulous thing in its own right. But I get the impression, Yoni, that I'm just touching the tip of the iceberg there. So tell us a bit more about your background, you know, what you've done and where you are today.
Sure. Let me do this. Let me start with kind of the beginning, because I think I'm a big proponent of context, right? The context really tells a story. And mine starts with an immigrant family. Family immigrated to Toronto, Canada. So I grew up in Toronto. To immigrants that immigrated several times. So my parents were originally from communist Russia, grew up there, had immigrated to the Middle East, had immigrated once again to Canada, kind of searching for a better life, a better future for them, or really setting the stage ultimately for my brother and I, for their kids.
Yep.
So growing up there, great city, great town, very multicultural, did my business school there in Toronto, studied at the Schulich School of Business in New York University, which was really an interesting experience. Again, kind of in light of my family heritage, it was kind of the first somebody that went to a premier business school.
I was going to say, because that's a pretty famous school.
Yeah, many folks in the U.S. aren't that familiar with it, but anybody, it's the premier business university.
It's the Harvard of
or the Wharton. In fact, Schulich has a correspondence relationship with Wharton.
Okay.
For the MBA program. So exactly, it's the Wharton or Harvard or Ivy League. After that, I spent about a year and a half in the investment banking industry. So that's what took me to the quote unquote, the real world.
Yeah.
And did about a year and a half of that. I learned a lot. It was a boutique firm, so it was nice to not be a little peg in the wheel of something massive with 20 sure. employees. But it was a small office, about 40 people, so I saw a lot.
Yep.
An entrepreneurial-minded company. Learned a lot, was thrown in, didn't have too much structure in that company, and also realized I didn't really want to keep doing this for a very long time. Not so much the industry, but also just being limited to something where I didn't feel I was fulfilling any sort of purpose beyond really the core fundamentals of what a bank does, which is raise money and whatnot. So I left that, spent about 6 months playing some music, totally took some time off, naturally, you know, made some good money.
Clearly, whilst you were thinking about your master plan, so it wasn't time.
Absolutely.
It was thinking time.
Well, it was, again, with my background, it was, you know, I did fairly well, six figures for a 22-year-old young man, and lived within my means. So I managed to save some funds and just said, you know what, let me take some time off, pursue my passion of music and mature, grow up a little bit. I think, you know, my generation and future generations, I think it takes us a little longer to grow up. Although I think these kids today are far more mature than I was from a business standpoint, from an entrepreneurial standpoint.
I think so, absolutely. But I mean, was it not a very difficult thing to do to leave a highly paid job? You must have had an awful lot of pressure from friends and family saying, Yoni, you must be crazy. You know, stay there, do well.
Yeah, some people thought I was a little, I do have to say this. I did have the full support of my parents. So I'm not going to pretend like that my parents have always instilled belief and confidence in any decision my brother and I took. But there was doubt. No, I felt the doubt. I felt the concern. And the real people that thought I was nuts were my coworkers.
Yes. Right?
We were doing really well. So that, man. But at the same time, I think they also saw it as, I got a little admiration for that as well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, to leave a really good situation financially to pursue something, and I didn't realize, I didn't know what I was pursuing, but I just knew I wasn't happy. I think that, you know, garnered some respect, but also a little bit of kookiness.
And I think a lot of people feel that, because I certainly remember, you know, being in my early 20s, having that same feeling, like, I don't know what it is, I just don't fit in here. And I was a stockbroker, so similar sort of situation. Yeah. And you feel that there's this burning ambition to do something, but the only problem is I don't quite know what that thing is yet. So,
Correct.
And what do you play an instrument or?
I do. Well, I play several. I play keyboards, drums, guitar, and I'm a vocalist as well. So I kind of grew up playing music.
And I think that shows a very sort of analytical mind. So clearly there was a plan. And I understand from my sources that you ended up in Panama.
I did. So what happened is that whilst playing music, about 7-8 months into it, that burning desire, I got the bug again. Whatever that bug was, but the bug to do something else, to be productive. And ultimately, I had to make a choice. I was either going to pursue music professionally. I couldn't just, you know, do it as a hobby forever.
Yep.
Or I was going to pursue business. I knew I didn't want to go into the workforce. Didn't want to, again, be kind of labeled as anything. And at the time, a family friend had bought some real estate in Panama. They came back all excited about it. Oh, my gosh. You know, they were raving about how amazing it was. And prices were affordable. And it was a stable economy and all this kind of stuff. And naturally, my ears perked up.
Yeah.
I saw a gateway to do something interesting. Didn't quite foresee what would happen, but looked into it, did a little research online, saw that, hey, you know what? I'd never thought of Panama as anything more than a place on the geography book, right? But did some quick reading, realized there was a boom going on, very stable economy, very established infrastructure, banking infrastructure, road infrastructure, obviously the Panama Canal, and then all the infrastructure related around that. And it just made sense, yet very early in the tourism. No, there was very little tourism that was happening from a standpoint of traditional tourism and international home buyers buying real estate. And they just smelled of opportunity, and that's what led me there.
Okay, so here's my question. In what order would you like to rearrange those statements? So in other words, it sounds, if I were in your position, I would have thought, hang on, he's making a fortune in Panama. I can do that. I would get myself out to Panama. Then I'd figure out a justification for it in my own mind afterwards. Is that how it worked?
You know what?
Did you really do the research beforehand, or did you just think, this is it, this is for me, I'll figure it out?
Oh, absolutely. When I say I did some research, I should have been more specific. I spent about an hour on Google.
That's it. Okay.
Yeah. That's what I mean by research. Yeah. Just, I wanted to make sure I wasn't getting kidnapped, you know, when I went there.
That's the most important bits, exactly. And the rest of it, we'll figure it out when we get there.
The rest of it, you know, my view of life is it's an adventure, and we got to live our adventure. And if you've ever heard of Dora the Explorer, she's out there exploring the world, right? And I'd actually studied abroad in Europe.
Yes.
So that kind of opened up the international travel bug for me as well. But absolutely, it was a case of, you know what, I had a good business degree. It was very employable. The worst that'll happen, I'll have another life experience, come back to Canada and get a job. That was my fallback plan. But very much like you say, it was there wasn't too much analytical thinking behind it.
Which I think is just what has to happen.
Yes.
But it also takes some real guts. You know, we mustn't understate that, to get on a plane and land somewhere, because I'm presuming that you didn't know anybody, you didn't have a whole bunch of contacts, you didn't have an office that you would parachute into.
No. You know what, not only myself being an entrepreneur, I have many friends that are, and I study entrepreneurs because I'm fascinated by those types of people. And there's definite commonality in folks that seek a sense of adventure, because that's what business is. I talk about it with my friends all the time. I live in a I'm very happy with where I live. It's a beautiful home. I'm very happy with the car I drive. That's about the extent of me needing, yes, being financially needy.
Yeah.
So, you know, once you're comfortable, what else is it about?
Yeah.
It becomes much, much more about dollars and cents. It becomes about purpose, adventure, helping others, philanthropy.
Yeah.
Just watching things develop. It's basically real life Monopoly. It's a game. And for those that have the right intentions, it could be a beautiful game where not only do you help yourself, you help the entity, but you help others and help build other people up. I mean, that's really what drives me every morning. Because again, if it was just about the dollars and cents, not to knock the banking industry, okay, we all need banks, but that's kind of what I felt there. And that's, I think, one of the things that really pushed me out of that particular business was the lack of purpose for me personally.
So let's talk about, and we'll come back to Panama because it's a great story, but I want to talk about MWR. And I think this leads nicely into what MWR stands for.
Yeah, well, MWR, a few things that happened in between, okay? So,
but I'm interrupting your flow, sorry.
No, that's okay. But it's just, you know, it's very difficult to cram years of 16-hour days into a three-minute recap.
Well, what I'm searching for is what MWR stands for in terms of those three letters.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to give you the whole story there, okay? When we had launched this company, I had invested into half of a warranty business.
Yeah.
That very, very unique model at the time where a monthly membership would cover all of your consumer electronics at the time. And when we had launched MWR, this is going back to the end of 2013, so about 3.5 years ago, what it originally stood for was My Warranty Rewards.
Yeah.
Okay. And as the company grew, we began introducing some other services and benefits into the company. And we realized, man, we can't be defined by warranties when we're out there selling other products and services. So what happened was that transformed to a couple of different things. So in actual fact, it's kind of like a songwriter writing a song. They're not going to disclose the meanings of the lyrics, right?
Yes.
So there isn't a formal meaning at this point. I can tell you where it started, but I'll tell you what it does mean for a lot of people, though.
Yeah.
It means make wealth real.
Yeah.
For people. It means my why is real.
Yes.
Going back to that sense of purpose, why people do what they do, what drives them every day. It means making wishes real.
Yes.
And there's a handful of gentlemen as well that I'm very friendly with. And for that personally, it means making my wife rich.
So, yes.
Understood. So we leave it up. But that's the story behind the name and how it kind of developed.
But I wanted to focus on the why, because, see, my question there is about the why, because you're talking about Panama and this driving ambition, and this all sort of links to your why. So as an entrepreneur, it's very difficult to figure out, you know, what I'm going to do. I have this burning ambition as an entrepreneur. I'm in this job. Should I go and, you know, what should I do? And I want to hear your views on, should you be chasing the money or should you be chasing the why?
I'll tell you what it was for me personally. Initially, it was about creating a comfortable financial base for myself.
Yeah.
And we're talking about a young man in his early 20s when I first started out in business. Okay. But like I said, very, very quickly, I came to a quick realization once I had a relatively comfortable base, which I was very fortunate. It happened real quickly for me in Panama. We came in, I did have a partner at the time, and within a matter of months, we saw success.
Yeah.
And with that came a sense of guilt as well, which I didn't see coming.
Okay.
And that's where a lot of the introspective thought and philosophizing started happening.
Yeah.
Because especially when there's folks around you that are more needy, folks around you that, hey, you know, things you don't think about, but once you start, you know, coming to a little more financial freedom, you don't think about spending $200 in a meal.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, most folks out there have to budget. It's just a matter of fact. And then these things start hitting you personally, and then it becomes... And then for me, it totally transferred into the why.
Yeah.
So I have to be very honest and transparent. It did start off, especially with my background and watching my parents struggle, not wanting to be that struggle, and ultimately wanting to also be able to provide not only for myself, but for those around me that I may be needing to provide, you know, into the future. But that turned very quickly into a why once that base was formed. Because I think we all eventually come to the realization that we have a purpose on this earth, right? And yep. What we do with our time and with our efforts and with our energies and how we impact people is what is the legacy we hope to not only leave behind, but even endure during our time here. And that, I think for most people, again, once that initial base has been accomplished is really the driving force. And that why could be different things to different people, right? If for some people, it's more of a philanthropic yeah. purpose. For some people, it's very much some people are hungry for power, and continued growth and recognition out there. So, but definitely the why is what, you know, dollars and cents aren't making people, you're not working 22-hour days if there's not a driving force behind your purpose.
I think that's a very important point. So my next question is, if you had continued to chase the dollar rather than stepping back, having that understanding and seeing the wider picture, do you think you would be more successful now if you had continued along the purely the monetary path? Or do you think the fact that you've stepped back and taken a more holistic view of life, do you think that's helped you expand much, much more?
I would definitely say it helped me expand much more. I will say this from experience, there are different types of people out there in this world. There is no one formula. Sure. I can say what personally works for me, what has worked for me, and my success, and then those that I look up to as mentors as well in the business world, are those people that have taken a holistic approach, taking a very much relationship-driven approach to business versus a black and white dollars and cents approach. You know, I much rather, if we're going to do a deal, I much rather make a deal that is good for the both of us, and I want to be friends first. I want to have a positive relationship first than just be able to, you know, maximize on this one deal.
Sure.
But you know what? If you didn't feel like you got your end of the bargain, and if you don't really, really like me because, you know, Yoni's a great guy and I want to keep doing business with him, then I'm probably not going to have a long-term scenario with you. And I think as important as the deal or as a short-term gain is the long-term relationships that we establish. Because at the end of the day, all you have in business and so much goes into it is relationship capital. It's the people you know. And that's cliche, but it's the absolute truth.
No, I don't think it's a cliche. I think it's very true. And I think it's very misunderstood by many people. And my experience as an entrepreneur is that if you're smart, you learn pretty quickly that what you have is yourself and you have your reputation, and you can't hide behind a department, which you can do if you work for a large firm. And so I think that does really bring out the best in people, because you realize that there can be no veneer. And
correct.
And do you think, I'm not sure if you can say that entrepreneurs are better business people. That would be, you know, I would never say that, but I think you have a different approach as an entrepreneur if you're out on your own.
Yeah. I mean, like I tell people, there's no rule book, there's no yellow brick road, right? You're out there in the world. And you learn to, with experience, you learn to have absolute trust in your gut and who you are and in your instinct. And for me, it's been, again, it's the old cliche, but if I treat people the way I want to be treated, treat them with respect. I'm big on respect, humility, appreciation, recognition. You treat people well. I don't care if it's business. I don't care if you're looking for a bandmate to form a band with.
Yeah.
They're going to love you and they're going to want to work with you. And then money, the bottom line, is a byproduct of all that other stuff.
Because you're, with MWR, you're really pinning your success on the efforts of other people. So what you're doing is you've created a network marketing organization, which really will only succeed if the people within the organization perform.
Exactly.
And that's quite it's a leap of faith, because what you're doing is you're losing the control that you have as an entrepreneur or as a business owner to a certain extent. And you're very much relying on your ability to teach and train and educate and guide people to be successful in their own right. And is that partnership element what attracted you to network marketing in the first place?
What attracted me initially was the industry fascinated me as a whole. You know, it's a fantastic industry, where if done right, designed properly, is one of the truest forms of win-win-win-win.
Yeah.
And it starts, going back to your point, it starts with the customer. Because really, we're pinning that success even beyond the representatives in the field on the customers. Because if customers don't have a positive experience, they can't build a business, right?
So correct. Exactly.
You've got a product or services that deliver real value and long-term value to that consumer.
Yeah.
Once you have that, you can build a compensation model and a business model where people out there in the world can join, become a home-based business owner, and build on that model.
Yeah.
And if designed right by the company, then the company wins. And the company must provide all the support. You know, we provide basically it's a business in a box, all the infrastructure. And the last piece of that, which again, serves a tremendous purpose to what all of us do, is we also give back. We have something called MWR Life Cares. We have a foundation called Helping Kids in Need. And in doing so, we're doing business. We're making money. We're building relationships. We're making friends. We're helping customers. We're also giving back. And all by just following the simple, you know, with one organization, MWR Life, we fulfill a lot of different areas of our lives. That's what attracts me to this industry, because it's extremely fulfilling in so many ways.
Yeah, because the difference between most other network marketing organizations is that you're very much service-oriented as opposed to product-oriented. Mm-hmm. So what you're not suggesting is that I go and fill my garage with product. And again, that's where it is interesting, because from a network marketing associate's perspective, you know, I want to make sure if I get involved in this that A, it's something I believe in, because otherwise it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. But how important, therefore, is the training, do you think? And how much emphasis do you put on training and mentoring people and building up, you know, mini entrepreneurs, as it were?
Training is huge. You know, it's often said network marketing, what network marketing is personal development with a product attached to it.
Yeah.
But we're in the business of personal development. And it's absolutely inherent in everything we do, both in corporate, and those that are leaders in the field, those that have had experience, understanding points of training, they instill training. So much of it is belief. You know, I look back at my experience in real estate, and what really helped me go over the edge was belief. It was all mental. It was when that first sale occurred, I knew I could do it. And we instill that with our people through the compensation plan, through recognition, and through training. And once people better themselves, then they can go out there and have the confidence to succeed, because it really, so much of it is in the heart and in the mind.
You're right. And I've heard you say before, which I completely agree with you, that mindset is 90%. I think it's more than that. You know, I think it's almost everything. It's your perception of what you can and cannot achieve steers your success. So how do you leverage your life experience to get your guys to understand that they too can be just as successful if they put their mind to it?
You know what? You know, we have an extensive training program within MWR. We actually have an academy that we take people through. But, you know, one of the best ways to transmit that information is through storytelling,
technology,
and sharing stories. You know, people learn from stories, right?
Correct.
Nobody wants to be talked at. Nobody wants to be given facts. People learn from others' actions and stories. And that's really a lot of what we do, is share our stories. I share my story all the time. I talk about myself about four times a day and what I've done and where I've come. But that's not just me. We share stories of others in the field, others that have had successes. And we hope that somebody will, that one person in the audience, or that will identify with Matthew or with Yoni, or with somebody else had a tough upbringing, or somebody else had a single mom, or somebody else had a very successful family, but they didn't get a lot of the personal attention. So they want to identify when people can relate to you, they'll then learn, they'll then trust, they'll have the trust to listen to you. And then, you know, what goes on in most people's minds, I know it went on in my mind when I was introduced to multimillionaire real estate folks, is if they could do it, I could do it. So it's a matter of relating and storytelling, and simply then encouraging people to go out there and give it a shot.
But that's a very difficult mindset to get someone to take on board, because the natural reaction is, oh my God, how did you do that? I would never be able to do that. So I think it's your experience, and I think you're playing your success down slightly, because it takes a real effort and it takes real mental strength to actually get into the mindset where you
think, because this all goes back to the why, though.
Yes.
So your why has to be so strong that it shatters, it's got to shatter your fears, it's got to shatter your procrastination. And quite frankly, if that why is not that, if it's not strong enough, it's not going to happen. So there's got to be a burning desire and a why to make a difference in your life. And if there is one, and you're conscious of it, and it's written down, and you're reminded of it, then yes, it's difficult, but then you'll push forward. It is that's foundational.
But your story again, you know, moving from country to country. It's very challenging. I'm a Brit. I moved over here a few years ago. And it's very difficult because you come with nothing. You come without the foundation, without the support. Do you think that most people, if they really dug deep, could find that why? Do you think people have it within them? Or is it just...
I would say absolutely. You know, and we tend to forget. I tend to forget. You just reminded me right now. I remember being, and it was challenging. But, you know, as years go by, you kind of forget.
Exactly, yes.
But you just reminded me, I remember being in the absolute wilderness of Panama, alone, didn't understand the language, which is extremely, for anybody that's moved to another country that doesn't understand anything, doesn't understand the TV, the taxi driver, the banker, it's a feeling of extreme isolation, okay? Had no friends, no contacts, and to be very frank, I had no right to be there. I was a tourist.
Yeah,
I had no right to even start a business. I wasn't even legally set up.
Yeah.
And it was a mental, it was tough. And I had to constantly, consciously remind myself of why I was there. And like I said, it started with that first sale.
Yeah.
First sale turned everything around for me and validated why I was there. And you've got to have patience. You've got to have perseverance. You've got to never give up. You will fall and you will fail. And I always talk about this too. Failure is not a bad word.
Yeah.
In fact, it's a great word because we all go through it to get to success. So if it didn't exist, none of us would be successful. And it's what makes you stronger and it's what you learn from.
Yep.
But there's no question. Nobody said this was easy. Absolutely not.
And
but
I think,
but it's all in here.
You're right. And I think the great thing about what you're doing with MWR is you're almost allowing people to find that why and to become an entrepreneur, but with the safety net of what they're doing at the same time. Because what you're saying is you don't need to leave your job. You don't need to go into this full time. But what you're doing is you're helping them discover their why, find out that they can be capable. And I'm sure you have some great examples of people that started slow, full of self-doubt, but have become star performers.
Yeah, I mean, part of what we do, we're in the business of personal confidence building. We're in the business of helping people make better versions of themselves, more independent versions of themselves. You know, a lot of it has to do with self-esteem, right? Not everybody, you know, so people are scared.
Yes.
Most people out there are just scared. And when they realize there's nothing to be scared of, when you can be very comfortable with who you are, that's when you really start to shine. And that's when, you know, I'm a big believer in the law of attraction as well. People feel that. When they feel you're comfortable in your skin of who you are, you know, and again, I look back at my own story. I'm not a natural, quote unquote, salesman. I'm probably more of a natural introvert. I'm not necessarily shy, but I'm more of a natural introvert. I was never a salesman. I don't have a radio voice. I'm not the best presenter. I'm not the best at anything. But I learned to be comfortable with who I am. And nobody's looking for you to be the best. They're looking for you to be authentic and real. And they're looking to relate to you. And when that can happen, and all you have to do is be yourself. Let the good that you have, share that with the world. The world will share the good they have with you. That's something that people need to, I think more and more people need to realize that. I think a lot of people don't really understand that, the law of attraction.
That's brilliant advice. And what would you say is the best piece of advice that you've ever received?
I got to think about this one for a moment. Here's a piece of advice that stuck with me. I'm going to give you three because I can't give you one. But the first one will be, this one was from my dad. It was a very basic piece of advice, but I was a kid, you know, and when you're a kid, you believe everything your parents say.
Yeah.
So I sincerely believed it, and I think it's carried me. And he told me that as a kid, and he would reinforce it every few weeks, he would say it, that you could do whatever you want, you could be whatever you want, whatever you dream of being, you have the skill set, you have the knowledge, and you'll be able to do it.
Yeah.
And we believe in you, you know, we as mom and dad. And it was, you know, he's not Tony Robbins. He's no motivational speaker. He just said it as a dad.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a profound moment of, hey, son, it was just off the cuff. But as a kid, we absorb everything. And when dad says that to you, you don't doubt what dad says. You believe it. And that was a piece of advice that really shaped my view of the world that, hey, you know, that was one. And I defaulted to that in moments of doubt.
Yes.
You know, later on in life. The second piece of advice, when this started in Panama, I was introduced to one of the major bank owners.
Yep.
So Panama was a major bank, kind of like a Switzerland. I was sitting in a boardroom of this gentleman that owned a bank that, you know, probably had, I don't know, $100 billion in assets.
Wow.
Very wealthy. And I'm thinking, how did I get into this situation? But anyway, his advice to me, unsolicited, was do everything with your own two hands. Okay. And that had a practical element to it,
but
it also had, it was a metaphor.
Yeah.
You know, the metaphor was take control. Don't wait on anybody. You know, take control, learn, take action. And that stuck with me. And of course I listened to the man because he owned one of the large banks in Panama. And the third piece that I will say, it wasn't really a piece of advice, but it's from one of my mentors. And this is a gentleman that had probably the second largest contracting businesses in Southern California, right around where you are, San Diego County, millions and millions and millions of dollars of annual revenue for the 30 years he was in business. And he didn't give me this advice, but he lived it. And that was just be yourself and live life with absolute humility, no matter how successful you are. This was the most humble, genuine, still is, genuine human being, but also one of the most successful, financially successful people I know on this planet that I personally know. And he was just, without trying to, he's always been a role model for me because, you know, in my mind, I didn't grow up around folks with money, but in my mind, it was what's his name? Michael Douglas.
And that,
you know, rich people had to be a certain way.
That's right.
And here he was, somebody that showed me, you don't have to be like that. You don't have to be that stereotype. And that made me comfortable with being able to be successful yet still be a human being.
Yes.
And so I would share those three kind of unique moments.
Well, Yoni, thank you so much. Those are fabulous advice. How do people get in touch with you? How do they find out more about what you're doing, what MWR is doing? How do they get hold of you?
Yeah, I would say, you know, we have a very exciting and dynamic Facebook page. It's facebook.com/MWRLife.
Okay.
Folks can go on there and see what's going on. Of course, our website is MWRLife.com. It tells a tale all its own. And for folks that want to contact us directly, they can simply email in to info@MWRLife with any questions, and we'll get back with them very, very quickly.
That's fantastic. Yoni, thank you for being such an amazing guest. I'm Matthew Sullivan. You've been listening to Hooked on Startups. See you next week.
Thank you, Matthew. Appreciate it.